For the past 45 years, John Holland has been one of the most influential and productive of contemporary psychologists. His elegant and practical theory of vocational personalities and work environments has revolutionized the practice of career assessment. Over the years, he has tested and revised his theoretical formulations and associated assessment tools, the self-directed search, the vocational preference inventory, the vocational identity scale, for assessing interests and personality, as well as the Holland Occupational Classification. Along the way, he initiated and led the research programs for the American College Testing Program and the National Merit Scholarship Corporation during their formative years when these organizations achieved national prominence. The products of Holland's theoretical and empirical work now provide a structure for the major interest inventories. Or, as John might put it, he unintentionally resurrected several competing inventories. His typology has also provided an intellectual tool for integrating our knowledge of vocational intentions, vocational interests, personalities, and work histories. His other contributions have included research on the varieties of talent, the productivity of educational institutions, interpersonal competency, creativity, and unintended talent loss when colleges select students with undue emphasis on academic ability. Respected for his direct and frank views on the science and practice of psychology, his wry sense of humor, and his generosity with practical and scientific advice, he has made possible the delivery of useful products of psychological science to large numbers of people. Both professionals and clients benefit from his practical theory and his self-directed assessments. Since he retired from Johns Hopkins in 1980, John has continued to work on the same old problems, but in contemporary settings. Currently, he is working on a revision of his typology that will incorporate beliefs in both the personality and the environmental models. With Gary Gottfredson's help, he is trying to improve the efficiency and the explanatory power of person-environment congruence using the Career Attitudes and Strategies Inventory and the Vocational Identity Scale. He has told me that he will include a progress report about those revisions in his talk today entitled Exploring Careers with a Typology, What We Have Learned and Some New Directions. Please welcome John Holland, recipient of APA's Distinguished Professional Contributions to Knowledge Award.
I thought I was being pretty cool about this, and I put my shoes on this morning, and I took a walk, and my feet hurt like hell. And I thought, well, I've got my most comfortable shoes. What's gone wrong? Maybe some new disease. As you mature, that's a cold word, you're supposed to be vulnerable to more and more things. And I just had my physical, and I'm everything is in working order, as we say. At any rate, I decided to take it easy and lie down a bit. And I said, I wonder if there's something in my shoe. Thin socks, both sides. It really makes your feet hurt. Crammed up in the dough. You talk about cool. I was hoping to give a very straight, polished talk. However, the light in New York is not very good. Especially on this podium, the light doesn't work. But Bruce, who always knows how to improvise, says, oh, hold it out here in the light. So that's what I have to do, unless you have a solution. Like I thought, well, put one of the chairs up here, and I'll work from the seat. Let's see how this goes. It also, however, you'll be able to see that I'm nervous by the amount that the paper shakes. Toward the end of the talk, you'll notice it doesn't shake anymore. And one other thing I wanted to say, since white males are supposed to be, unfeeling, among other things. We're really a bad group. My daughter is here. She's taken the SDS, every form. She's, I've got permission to say, she's person C in the manual. She doesn't look like personal C or as old as she really is, but she started at age 16. She took it at 18, 21, 30. Then as she got more mature, she took it one more time. Well, two more times. Okay. So much to show you that I'm a decent person. Here's a better spot, Bruce. Oh, God. I had many worries preparing this talk. I've got another one now. Frankly, I've always had trouble preparing talks, but this time was the most trying. I find myself wanting to give two different talks. One would be a summary of what I've learned about careers along with some new work. The other talk would be a summary of what I've learned from my encounters with journal editors, philosophical advocates, my philosophy is better than yours, political movements and methodological shifts. After toying with both talks, I decided to summarize what we've learned about careers by using a typology as a theoretical guide. I found that I could not create a rational account of my encounters with the social and intellectual hazards that infiltrate the research enterprise today and in the past. At the same time, I could not resist including a few anecdotes to ding on critics and other points of view. You know, this holding your talk out like this, it makes you talk slowly. And I have a tendency to go too fast. This may be a new thing we've discovered here. I have a couple of other worries. Because I am old, I have two other problems. I'm supposed to be above the pettiness and the bias of my past competitive life and to be engaged in helping younger colleagues. I find this experience hard to meet from time to time. In addition, next year at 76, my faculties, according to the APA Committee on Vitality and Aging, are likely to drop precipitously. So I'm trying to finish my important projects this year. Because of the uneven popularity of this theory, it is necessary to provide a brief summary. A full account is contained in my book, which you can now get from my new publisher without an extended telephonic adventure. It's okay to laugh. The typology assumes it is useful to characterize people according to the resemblance to six personality types and to characterize environments according to six ideal environments. Each type is assumed to flourish in an environment having the same label. For example, realistic types flourish or do well in a realistic environment because it provides opportunities, activities, and tasks and roles that are congruent with the realistic type's competencies, interests, self-beliefs, and so on. More explicitly, you can see I was a college professor once. It is assumed, other things being equal, that congruence of person and job environment leads to job satisfaction, stability of career path, and achievement. Conversely, incongruence, person and job are mismatched, leads to dissatisfaction, instability of career path, and low performance. The estimation of congruence has been assessed with a variety of techniques ranging from simple to complex, such as do the person and job share the same code, an investigative type, in an investigative environment, to mathematical or statistical comparisons of six variable profiles for the person and his or her environment. The principal empirical tools for estimating a person's resemblance to the personality types have been the six scales of the self-directed search or the first six scales of the vocational preference inventory. The characterization of work environments has been performed by many techniques, with a dictionary of codes for all occupations in the U.S. economy by Gobertson and myself, has supplanted earlier techniques which are less comprehensive and often impractical. I should add that codes were established by an empirical process. Figures 1 and 2 provide a brief summary of my delusional system that you can use to follow my talk. I don't ask you to believe, but the figures will help you evaluate what I have to report. The application of the typology's classification system to work histories represents its most explicit success. In theoretical terms, continuity means staying in the same job or moving among jobs that belong to the same occupational category. Continuity has also been elaborated to mean moving among jobs that belong to the same or a theoretically related category. The application of the classification to work histories demonstrates that the average career has substantial continuity. For example, my colleagues and I examined the work histories of a national representative sample of 989 men aged 30 to 39. 79% of the 5,812 job changes up to age 39 occurred within a single major category in the six-category system. In short, people tend to move among similar jobs, see Table 1. In the most impressive study, Gottfredson performed similar analysis of stability and change using the same six-category classification and data from the 1970 census. He showed that career stability in five-year intervals for a nationally representative sample of men and women increases with age from 25 to 70 for both sexes. Note in Table 2 that the percentages of workers moving within the same occupational category at ages 21 to 25 are 75 and 72% for women and men, and that these percentages increase steadily with age. The continuity in careers has also been demonstrated by other investigators using different classification systems and populations. They include Rowe et al., as well as others, as well as economists, sociologists, and other psychologists. Now I want to outline how the typology provides some psychological explanations for the continuity or stability of careers. The application of the typology to the vocational aspirations or intentions of people of different ages also demonstrates the continuity or cohesiveness of an individual's intentions. For instance, McLaughlin and Tiedemann demonstrated that the category of a high school student's vocational aspiration predicts the category of actual employment 11 years later. And the predictive value of aspiration increased when predictions were made at older ages. These findings hold for my classification and two others with only trivial differences in the outcomes. These findings are impressive because they're obtained from a national representative sample of high school students, and the predictive efficiency of the aspirations rival those obtained from interest inventories. In another study, Gottfredson and I, 19-something, have shown that a person's current aspiration is significantly related to most of his or her earlier aspirations. Table 3 suggests that a person's current and past aspirations cohere or have a predictable pattern like that exhibited by a typical work history. Taken together, the aspiration studies imply that people carry around a set of loosely integrated intentions that they act upon from time to time. Another source of explanation comes from the study of vocational interests. In general, multiple interest inventories, which follow my typology, indicate that people tend to act on their dominant interests and seek occupations where their interests can be expressed. Of major importance, interests are both relatively stable over long periods of time and become more stable with age. In short, aspirations and interests provide useful explanations for the stability of work histories. They are especially useful because a vast array of work implies that aspirations and interests are closely linked to each other as well as to other stabilizing influences. These influences include linkages between the present typology and life histories, heredity, and the big five personality variables. For instance, there are about seven analyses that show that the six types have strong to weak relationships with four of the big five factors. These relationships support both the independent formulations for the types and the big five factors. For purposes of this typology, a person's expressed aspirations and inventoried interests are viewed as reliable and valid assessments of the more remote forces that I simply listed earlier. Aspirations and interests, silly self-reports that they are, enjoy several advantages. They're easily observed and can be assessed from age 5 to 95. Aspiration and interest data can be organized to yield efficient predictions of subsequent choices, and choices are in turn related to actual occupational entry. Information about categorized aspirations and interests is easily communicated among clients, clinicians, and researchers. Aspirations and interests to a lesser degree are amenable to change and are responsive to experience. At the same time, stability appears to be the norm. I should add that the personality types represent six powerful dispositions that incorporate much, but not all, of the effects of a person's life history and biological endowment. In addition, I assume that a listing of one's aspirations and interests via the self-directed search or related inventories is a useful index of a person's resemblance to each of these ideal dispositions or types. It's going better than I thought. Well, you should try this. This is the way to do this, Bruce. You're the inventor. I'm the guy who elaborated, got it to work. The studies of career aspirations, interests, and personality provide useful explanations of the continuity observed in careers. At the same time, they are incomplete because they focus on personal characteristics and neglect environmental characteristics. For more comprehensive explanations of stability and change, it is helpful to review the investigations of person-environment interactions in which the person and the environment receive about equal attention. The application of the typology to the educational, social, and vocational experiences of high school and college students, workers, and retired people implies how people of different ages comprehend and interact with their environments. A brief overview of this research suggests that people are more satisfied and stable if they live or work in environments that are congruent with their personality type. For instance, Mountain Muchinski found strong support for the correspondence between a worker's interest and occupational environment when the SDS codes, the high point code in the interest profile for 362 workers were compared with the codes, one letter, for current occupation. 76% of the workers were in occupational environments that matched their self-estimated abilities, competencies, and interests. In addition, congruency of interest and job was positively correlated with job satisfaction. Other studies imply that workers leave occupations when they lack the traits assigned to their occupation by the typology. Similar findings are observed for college students when major field is examined. Students are more satisfied that the code for their major field matches their coded interest profile. The most persuasive evidence for the congruency hypothesis was obtained in an elaborate experiment. Helms and Williams had high school students with one of six kinds of interests try out six simulated occupational environments. Each environment was characterized by a work kit for a representative occupation, which required the solution of a common problem. Each student experienced each randomly assigned simulation and completed a scale after each experience to assess whether or not the simulated occupation would be congruent with the student's competencies, interests, and personality traits. Students found the simulation that paralleled their interest type to be most compatible. In addition, the degree of compatibility between student and simulated work was often in the order predicted by the hexagonal arrangement of the types. For example, students with conventional interests found the accounting kit for the conventional environment most compatible, and the designer kit for the artistic environment most incompatible. The kits for the remaining environments received intermediate ratings. I might add that after 20 years of persuasion, I've got the author to the point where he has an article to submit now on this. It was a neglected and obscure technical report, and with Gobertson's help, we put a full court press on him over a period of years with nothing underhanded, but we did communicate everything to him. And we also put in some modern analyses. One way to interpret this is with an index called the G-index, which is kind of a measure of standard deviation. We get a range of those things almost up to 2 standard deviations. And in correlational terms, they range from a miserable low 3 to 84, and the median of 47. That's better than anybody ever gets. Now, it is true, it's inflated a little, but I don't want to dwell on that. In an evaluation of a nationwide summer program developed to encourage minority and female high school students to enter engineering, Richards and his friends found that these orientation programs of 1 to 3 weeks function like a typical job experience. The number of students planning to study engineering was increased. At the same time, the more potential a student had for engineering, the more likely a student was to plan on engineering. Conversely, students with little potential for engineering went away believing that engineering was clearly not for them and that the experience was helpful. In still other investigations, high school and college students have provided explanations, in quotes, for changing or persisting with a particular aspiration or college major. In a longitudinal study, Nichols, et cetera, found that both major field stayers and changers, men and women, reported interest in the course content as the most frequent explanation for staying or changing fields. Incidentally, we replicated that several times where we gave the same items, same survey to people who are changing or staying, asked them the same questions, more or less, same content. And interest was the thing that made a difference. Contrary to much popular opinion, faculty did not. Well, maybe it's not so popular. 2 other investigations also imply that young people consciously pick over occupational options in terms of potential person-job interactions, and that their thinking about potential interactions follows the typology. Another group of studies suggests how workers interact with one another, or how people with similar or dissimilar interests interact. These investigations of counselor client, marital partners, or roommates, those interactions have some of the quality of a person-job interaction and the same and their outcomes. For example, in one study, college roommates who had failed to get along, as assessed by dorm supervisors, had significantly different vocational interests. Similarly, a high school student's rating of the relationship with his counselor is more positive when student and counselor share similar vocational interests. Finally, 4 studies imply that marital interactions resemble a worker-job interactions, or congruencies associated with satisfaction. In one investigation, Wiggins found that marital partners seeking help had more divergent interests than a control group. In another study, he found that second marriages, as opposed to first marriages, were characterized by greater similarity of interests as inferred from the occupation of each partner. Brooke and Gilligan and Brooke and Scofield also found marital satisfaction to be associated with the congruence of interest. This incomplete review of hard and soft research implies that congruence of interest is conducive to stability and satisfaction in both interpersonal and person-job interactions. A few studies also imply that explanations of interactions given by research participants parallels the explanations from the theory. If you're familiar with my theory, you have been bored by this whole thing. Now we come to something you don't know. I come now to some theoretical worries. Despite the usefulness of the congruency hypothesis, there are some empirical anomalies that require resolution. Here, anomalies or perturbations in the data are words for weak theories or assorted errors. Politicians are not the only occupation to employ spin control. The most striking anomaly is the general inefficiency of the congruence hypothesis. For instance, Carson found that a sense of vocational identity was more predictive of job satisfaction than congruence of interest in job. Earlier, Gobertson and I discovered that a person's expectation of job satisfaction was more predictive of actual job satisfaction than the congruency of interest in jobs. The questions raised by these articles are compounded by three meta-analyses that come to conflicting conclusions about the value of person-environment fit. They range from it's a useful idea to congruency is dead. Other worries include a general failure by researchers to elaborate or specify the work environments in the execution of congruence studies. Instead, most studies attend more to the person than to the environment. In short, there are some embarrassing findings that require better research, a revised typology, or both. I prefer revising the typology because it clearly needs repair. Although more high-quality work should help, useful revisions appear more promising and can occur in my lifetime. That's a joke. People are afraid to laugh at old people. I mean, mature. Since 1987, I've been revising the typology off and on to give it more explanatory power. The first revision entailed incorporating some of Rogich's ideas about beliefs in both the formulations for the personality types and the environmental models. The gist of these changes is that different types have different belief systems, and that different environments promote different belief systems. For example, the environment of the psychologist includes beliefs such as, quote, human behavior is infinitely complex. Therefore, simple explanations or solutions are always suspect. Put another way, well-trained psychologists are professional worriers or undergeneralizers. In recent years, the incorporation of a person's beliefs about career stability and change and career changing also appear to be another set of revisions that might improve explanations. Most measures currently used in applying the typology are indirect or remote assessments of potential actions. In contrast, an assessment of beliefs and strategies about possible career activities and goals appears more direct or closer to the phenomena we hope to explain. This approach, asking people about their beliefs and strategies, is strongly reinforced by the successful use of one or more vocational aspirations in old and recent work. Earlier, I reported that the predictive validity of a single vocational aspiration, categorized according to the occupational classification, equals or exceeds the efficiency of an interest inventory. I should add that other analyses suggest that if two aspirations belong to the same category, that's for a single person, the predictive efficiency is increased from about 45% for a single aspiration to 75 to 86% for two aspirations. If three aspirations belong to the same category, the efficiency ranges from 89 to 100%. Those are for smaller samples, those 100%. Nevertheless, one of the more exciting things about that, old people get excited occasionally, is that those are my relatives laughing. They've been told what to do. There has never been a contradiction to those findings. That is, two is always better than one, three is better than two. There's no contradiction. And the percentage is so far beyond a multiple regression or any other formula. But I'll talk about later why nobody does this kind of research except for Gottfredson and me. And where was I? Well, the time intervals for those things range from 7 days to 7 years. Okay, some related work with the neo-personality inventory by Costa and McRae and that group implies that artistic and investigative interests have substantial correlations with openness, and openness is also associated with more frequent job changing in a large adult sample. It's also associated with having more than one marital partner. But we're not on that topic today. These findings and some tentative theoretical revisions led to the development of the Career Attitudes and Strategies Inventory by Gottfredson and myself. This inventory attempts to assess a person's attitudes and strategies about careers, including both the work and non-work environments that impinge on career changing, work performance, and job satisfaction. Table 4 describes the 9 CASI scales. The expectation is that the use of selected CASI variables to supplement the typology would yield both efficient, more efficient, and more explicit explanations of career stability and change, job satisfaction, and perhaps job performance. For example, people with stable work histories, working in jobs or occupations with similar occupational codes, would be expected to have well-defined interest profiles, high identity scores, coherent vocational aspirations, as well as CASI scores like the following: high job satisfaction, high work involvement, few career worries, low interpersonal abuse, and high skill development. So far, the explanation of these potential revisions by Gottfredson and myself are churning out some positive findings. The most striking finding suggests that job satisfaction has a strong correlation with vocational identity, 0.70. In turn, vocational identity is negatively correlated with career worries, minus 67, and interpersonal abuse, minus 34, for an adult sample. These findings are reinforced by the correlates of career search activities, a long laundry list of job-seeking and planning activities. These searching activities are associated with job dissatisfaction, thoughts about job changing, and reports of career worries, interpersonal abuse, and family commitment. Table 5 provides an incomplete account of these results. The identity versus the CASI, the identity scale versus the CASI correlations in Table 5 become more interpretable when the identity scale versus the Big 5 factor correlations in Table 6 are reviewed. You can do this all later. These data imply that identity is positively related to extroversion and conscientiousness and negatively to neuroticism. In new research, we expect to acquire a more complete understanding and to obtain more efficient predictions of person-job interactions. In short, the selective incorporation of career beliefs and strategies should increase the explanatory power of the typology. I'm also exploring a more focused and economical revision. It goes like this. Substitute the identity scale for the CASI scales. Why? Because the vocational identity scale captures much of the variance in the CASI scales, as well as substantial variance in the career search activities and career obstacles checklists, which I haven't talked about, but it's a list of troubles that people have. Of equal importance, vocational identity provides, in conjunction with the rest of the theory, a simple and plausible explanation of career stability or instability. For instance, a person with a clear sense of identity has an explicit and relatively stable picture of his or her goals, interests, skills, and suitable occupations. Therefore, a person with a clear sense of identity is more likely to accept or find work that is congruent with his or her personal characteristics and to persist in his or her search for a congruent work environment. In contrast, persons with a diffuse sense of identity are more likely to have a work history that is characterized by incompatible choices, frequent job changes, and a diverse set of successive jobs. Again, why? First, vocational identity represents a host of stabilizing beliefs and strategies in the capacity. Second, the identity scale is closely related to job satisfaction. In turn, job satisfaction is closely related to job changing in the IO literature. Third, the identity scale captures neuroticism on the low end and extroversion on the high end, as well as many other personality variables that imply that the identity scale is a general measure of psychological adjustment or health. These are some of my speculations about revisions. My main goal is to incorporate revisions within the old typological formulations as much as possible and to avoid a long list of moderator variables. Put another way, I don't want to lose the chief virtue of this and other typologies, the ability to organize large amounts of information about people and environments in an economical and accessible way. At the same time, I've been trying to soften the main weaknesses of this typology and other typologies, a lack of information on developmental issues or the processes of change. I believe that the incorporation of beliefs and strategies will strengthen the typology so it becomes more of a useful, purpose-filled, and cognitive theory. I meant to take that word out. I always take out the difficult words, and now people, I think I have a small vocabulary. In this talk, I've neglected the hexagonal model and the classification system. The research about the classification model does not lend itself to a brief English summary. The research about the classification is easy to comprehend, but this information bores most people. At the same time, the research about both topics has generally been supportive of the main constructs, their arrangement in the circumplex, and some associated practical applications. On the other hand, the negative findings are usually hard to get excited about. For example, the hexagonal model gets more support in the United States than it does in other countries or with translations, and more support for men than for women. But the differences tend to be small or trivial. I've also omitted a report of my attempts to rehabilitate the secondary constructs of consistency and differentiation. They are still on the table, and I see some solutions for rescuing them from some common misunderstandings and their up and down research findings. I have some new worries. Some recent work should clarify what revisions look useful. In the meantime, some new worries have surfaced. Many writers have reported that stable careers will not be the norm in the future, and that one's job will not be a major source of fulfillment. If these forecasts come true, career theories may soon lack a phenomena to explain. I think you have troubles. I've spent 45 years working on the wrong problem. Most of us will become casualties of vast structural and social changes and take whatever part-time or full-time work we can find. Any job will become more important than a compatible one. Perhaps we will not return to the stable employment patterns of the past. On the other hand, despite these Chicken Little scenarios, many people will continue to search for compatible work or situations that bring pleasure, use skills, and express values. It is unlikely that we can shed our special life histories. Whether or not desirable work is available, most people will remain oriented towards special clusters of activities, skills, occupations, and recreations. The power of these special dispositions is demonstrated in large-scale studies of retirement. These surveys indicate that the majority of retirees continue to perform paid work or volunteer activities that are closely related to their earlier careers. The growth of early retirement and the growing interest and research in recreation appears in part to be an outcome of the alienation associated with the great structural employment shifts. Whatever the correct diagnosis, large proportions of the population must learn to cope with transient and unpredictable job opportunities. Among other things, the need for a sense of personal identity will greatly increase, for the stable employment structures of the past have reduced the need for personal identity and independent planning. Many people will have to create their own structure for combining incompatible work with a more satisfying social and recreational life. To deal with this, what has been seen as career counseling may become life counseling, and work is an important facet of creating a more satisfying life. The typology also provides a tool for understanding the three jobs of the future that our labor secretary has proposed. His work categories are easily translated. Routine production services equal realistic and conventional jobs. In-person services equal social and socialistic jobs. And symbolic analytic services resemble investigative and artistic jobs, along with a few enterprising jobs. The typology provides a tested scheme for interpreting how the new work opportunities benefit some occupational groups more than others. For instance, R's and C's are in a shrinking labor market. Their problems are compounded by their work environments that have encouraged dependent rule following and traditional thinking. Now they must find work in an increasingly ambiguous and disorganized work environment, but their work has prepared them for life in a neatly structured situation. No one should be surprised that their mature dispositions are ill-suited for new kinds of work in a chaotic market. Incidentally, there is a sociologist in Florida he's an obscure sociologist. I had a hard time finding him. And he has studied people who receive $100,000 or more in a lottery and what happened to them. Well, the answer is they continue doing the same thing. Sometimes they take a year off and do foolish things, or depending on your values, do important things. And then they return to work or do something else. If they're old, they retire with a little better benefits. So that's more evidence, I think, that people are not as malleable as some people have us believe. Last, I want to say something about my hidden agenda in my talk, and then stop. I reported some key findings because professionals, like most people, are overwhelmed by excessive information. I wanted to give you the overview of my daydreams about how it all fits together. I wanted to attract some new researchers, or some researchers, new or old, to fully exploit the aspiration and work history studies that have produced such provocative findings. The work history findings should be replicated with more recent data. They are very old. The aspiration research has worked well from 1963 to 1992, but it has been neglected by everyone except Gary Gottfredson and myself. The neglect is probably due to several problems. A person's aspirations give interest inventory authors and their publishers inferiority feelings. This kind of research also lends itself to low-level technical analyses that anyone can perform. So unless the research report is fogged up with superfluous analyses, the outcomes fail to impress colleagues or journal editors. Critics of self-report data typically fail to distinguish between self-reports that work for a specific purpose with a specific assessment technique from reports that fail for other purposes and with other techniques. I hope someone will pick up on these topics and run with them into the next century. Among other things, future researchers can decorate the simple analyses that flow from these studies with a new esoteric analysis so that colleagues and editors will fall down with admiration and excitement. Thank you. I think now I may run for something. Thanks for coming.